Ladies and gentlemen, now hosting the RizzoCast, put your hands together for Steven Risotto!
What's going on, everybody, and welcome. My name is Steven Risotto. I cover the San Francisco Giants for SF Bay, and I'm the host of RizzoCast, a podcast that features current and former big league players, coaches, fans, media, and others who are regarded as some of the brightest minds around the game of baseball. Welcome to another edition of Why I Love the Game. This is, you know, becoming one of my favorite series on this podcast, where I have baseball fans and people that want to come on and kind of share their story about how they got into baseball, their baseball origin, and why they love the game, because we all have our reasons, as you may know. I'm joined today by two very special guests. One of them is Nick Vitas, who is actually a friend of mine, and Nick takes amazing pictures. He does some work for the Santa Rosa Press Democrat, Santa Rosa Community College. He does a lot of great things, and his dream is to become a sports photographer. He's big in the journalism field. We talk a lot about what he's into. And also Nathan Swords from South Carolina. Nathan is a umpire. He's been a coach. He's done a lot of really awesome things, and can't wait to talk to him. It ended up being a really, really good interview. Got a lot of insight. He's got some baseball in his blood already. You'll find out why I say that in just a bit. Again, my apologies. I haven't done an episode in such a long time. It's been a little busy here. As some of you may know, I'm graduating. This is my senior year of college at San Francisco State University. So I'm getting everything I need to get done, and I'll be back podcasting definitely more this summer, and hopefully some more in the coming weeks. So without further ado, let's get started to another edition of Why I Love the Game.
All right. And we are back on RizzoCast with Nick Vitas, and Nick is from Sonoma, and Nick is our first person into the questioning room here in terms of how he became a baseball fan. And Nick is nice enough to take some time and join the show. Nick, how's it going? Welcome.
Doing good. Yeah, I'm honored. I'm ready to be grilled and be put on the hot seat for being a diehard Giants fan who suffers every year and is affected from Giants torture.
There you go. And exactly. And I will say, it's not much of a hot seat. These are all softball questions. It's pretty straightforward. I'm sure you've listened to one of the episodes and get a good idea of how kind of it flows. But I do want to mention that, like myself, you're also a student journalist. You're writing for the Oak Leaf, but also you got a big time position with the Santa Rosa Press Democrat. So
yeah,
shout that out, and I'll let you shout that out.
Yeah, shout out to the Oak Leaf where I got my starting, and then shout out to the Press Democrat for hiring me as a contract photographer. It's been a ton of fun.
Exactly. Yeah, we're going to get into that in just a little bit, but I do want to first ask, you mentioned you're a Giants fan. How did the baseball journey begin? Because a lot of people have their own stories about how it birth. Everybody's got their own stories about how it started and how they adapted into more of a baseball fan. But birth, tell me a little bit about
birth.
That.
Well, I first called the park that they play at Pac Bell, and I didn't even know it was Pac Bell until it was AT&T Park. It's like, oh, it's AT&T Park. Like, I just grew up, my dad was like, yeah, it's Pac Bell. Like, okay, it's Pac Bell Park. But I'm pretty sure my first game, I don't even remember my first game, but I know I was a child. I was like a baby. I don't remember any of it, but I have a picture of it somewhere in this house of me being held by Lucille when I was maybe under a year old. I have no idea where the photo is at, but it's here somewhere. But it just started at birth.
Started at birth. Now, you mentioned Pac Bell. Did you have a tough adjustment when it became AT&T and then it became Oracle?
Because
when
it's still AT&T to me.
Okay, a little bit to me too. I mean, I thought it would be a tougher transition. It really wasn't. It was kind of seamless. But do you still call it AT&T?
AT&T. Yeah, I went there. I went there on the off season where it changed from AT&T to Oracle. And I was there on that day when I saw the crane like taking down AT&T, and I was like, no, I took the photos and everything to kind of save it. And I was like adamant for that first year. I was like, no, it's not Oracle, it's AT&T. And now I can say both. I'll just say both. AT&T, yeah. Oracle. But then I feel like when I say Oracle, I still remember, you know, Oracle Arena for the Warriors. So I'm like, I don't know, Giant Stadium.
Yeah, Giant Stadium. There you go. I don't even think about Oracle Arena, any like, which is very sad to say, and I probably regret saying it right now because I'm gonna get people after me for that one. It was an interesting transition there. But what is it about baseball? Because like, you know, we're all fans of other sports. I know you shoot some you know, a lot of racing, right? NASCAR you've done before, being in the
NASCAR, NHRA, mostly like high school baseball, football, soccer, basketball, whatever they send me out to. I think I center around baseball so much because I just grew up with it. Mm-hmm. Like I grew up playing it. I mean, I stopped before high school, but I just did. I don't know. There's just something about it. I just don't know how to describe just how much fun it is to sit around and watch 9 innings of baseball, especially in person. That's the best. I mean, being at home is usually where I think it's where we watched all three of the Giants World Series was at home, because you can't afford to go to a World Series game. But I mean, some of my best days with friends was like buying the cheapest seats possible in the bleachers and just like packing it up and just having fun all day, because you know, before the pitch clock and all that crap, the games were like three, four hours long. You know, you kind of plan your day around going to the game, which is great, because then like I love to get there like 3, 4 hours early. I like to have, you know, lunch or dinner first, hang out with friends that I have there. You know, like it kind of becomes your whole day, like you know, event, and I love that.
Yeah, no, I like that too. And it's funny, when I started covering games and they said that the gates opened at 2:45 for night games, I was like, man, get me in there at 2:45.
Wait, exactly.
Yeah, because I hate being late to stuff. It's kind of like a terrifying thought to ever be late to anything, especially professionally. And you probably get this too. And we actually
absolutely
just had, and as a photojournalist like yourself, we just had a presentation in one of our classes. And one of the photojournalism advisors said, photographers should be the first one there and the last to leave. So I'm sure that is
like 95% true. Whenever I'm on the schedule for like, let's say, like actually I just shot a basketball game at Maria Curio High School. I'll shout them out because I was just there. I photographed a basketball game and I was there an hour early before the game even starts. Like, yep, because it's just I'm here. I want to check out the gym, make sure that my camera's ready. You know, like it's just kind of my job. And then afterwards, I want to catch the emotion of them either winning or losing. So, you know, yeah, we're the first ones in, last ones out.
And on the journalism, and those that listen to this know that I always hype up journalism. And whenever I talk to media people on here, I always get into the weeds of the craft of journalism. And do you have like ambitions to take photos for like Major League Baseball? I'm sure that's a dumb question. I'm sure it's like,
it's, of course, spoiler alert, I have tried for the past 5 years to be employed by the San Francisco Giants as a photographer. I always apply every year for their photo internship, and I never get a call back. Giants, come on, please. I'm begging you. Give me a chance. Look at my portfolio. No, that's that would be like the dream. That would be the dream.
And what is it about that? Like, is it just being around Major League Baseball? Is it, you know, combining two of your hobbies, baseball and photos together?
I think I'd die a happy man. I'd wake up happy every day to go to work. I mean, just being in that environment. I mean, I've seen the Giants lose. I always think I went to a Giants Rockies game ages ago, and I think we lost like 20-4. It was a miserable game, but I loved every moment of it still. I just love being there. It's I think I joked with my friends a lot that Giants Stadium is basically a church, and I love to go. And I'll usually go about 20 times in a season, or as much as I can.
Wow, that's a pretty packed schedule. Now, I do want to ask, I heard when you were answering one of the questions that you don't like the pitch clock. You said,
absolutely not.
That pitch clock crap. I'm quoting.
Yeah.
Why?
It's ridiculous. I believe that baseball is a long drawn out game of chess. And I'm almost certain that Bruce Bochy has said something similar. I would rather see a methodically game or a methodical game like laid out. It's just, you know, I want it to be as long as possible, because if I buy a ticket that's like, let's say, $80 to sit behind home plate, I want all 3.5 hours of fun. I want to be able to see all that. And yeah. I guess that could also change. I mean, I'm not sure when this rule changed either, but like the 3 minimum batters that a bullpener has to face, I don't like that either. Because like, I remember some of the most like intense things was maybe like Javier Lopez would come out for only like one pitch, like one player, one batter. And be like, yeah, that's what we signed him for. We signed him to get us out of that jam right there. Like, that's like, yeah, I don't believe any of that crap. And I'm seeing it now at San Jose Junior College, the Bear Cubs, they have an 18-second pitch clock. And I've only seen 2 or 3 violations, but they're starting it, you know, sooner and sooner, you know, to basically prepare players coming up the chain to like, this is going to be a permanent thing. I don't see it going away anytime soon, which sucks for me, but I wouldn't be surprised if it trickles down to high school sooner rather than later.
Yeah. And I think it's all about being consistent with the clock, and I don't mind it, because I think like it's the same game with the clock, and you know, maybe not in the tight moments in the postseason or whatnot. Maybe you're kind of robbed of those dramatic moments. The Trout Ohtani at bat would have never happened. But I am with you on the 3 batter minimum. I don't like that rule. I think it changes the complexity of how to manage a bullpen. But did you want to add on to my argument there with the?
Yeah, I think one of the crappiest moments, I'll keep it PG, I won't swear, one of the crappiest moments that I saw live was with a colleague of yours, Sean Young. We went to the Giants and A's game where they honored Sergio Romo, and they charged him with not one but 2 pitch clock violations, when this man is literally just trying to like pitch one last time in front of fans, and the umps killed it. Like, do you not realize the amount of respect that the fans are trying to give him, and the amount of respect he's trying to give us, and you charge him with not one but 2 violations, and you completely destroy his inning to pitch in front of us one last time? Like, that was an ultimate insult from MLB and from the umpires there to not realize the moment. There has to be a way how to be able to like let teams know, like, can we just take one half inning of no pitch clock to respect someone?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense to me whatsoever.
Now, can I clarify my point?
Go ahead.
I'm with you on that. I think, again, fan of the pitch clock, but with an added complexion of common sense. And I think like that goes with all umpiring. Like, the rule book is there. The rule book should be followed to the best of, you know, the best an umpire could possibly do. But at the same time, there needs to be common sense. Like, if a guy's getting a standing ovation, you know, and now I think the rule is that teams have to notify Major League Baseball like 24 hours in advance. Hey, you know, Giancarlo Stanton's coming back to Miami. That's a horrible example because there's no fans there. Giancarlo Stanton's coming back to Miami. We need, you know, he's going to get an ovation probably, you know, something like that. Or you know,
Ohtani going back to the Angels.
There you go. Yeah, that's a good example.
Actually, he might get booed. I'm not sure about that one.
He might. He went just down the freeway. Or up the freeway, or however it is. But I think the rules will continue to grow. I don't think the pitch clock needs any changing. I think we'll see what happens with that. So I want to go into a little bit about individual guys that maybe you followed. Who were the players that you kind of looked up to, you kind of enjoyed watching, or maybe that you still enjoy watching?
I would probably say like one of the first Giants players that I really enjoyed watching would be like Javier Lopez, or mostly like bullpenners. I'd love to see the pitchers play, especially bat too. That was always fun. Yeah. You know, rest in peace to, you know, the pitchers actually being able to hit. But like that, I think, trying to like really look.
Is that another one you don't like?
You don't. Yeah, a little bit. We have to get into DH. That's crap. But like, I'm almost certain. Like the first two players that I really like, was like, oh my God, that's so cool that they're doing this, was Javier Lopez, Jeremy Affeldt, and I'll go for three. Tim Lincecum. Fun story about Timmy for me is that I went to this game with my dad. It was Tim Lincecum's first homestand as a Giant, and I went up to the, I think I was, I don't even know how old I was. I was maybe, I don't, I couldn't tell you, maybe like 9 or 10 or I was young. And we had these tickets right behind home plate. And I ran up to the dugout with a baseball and a silver Sharpie. And I remember just, I couldn't even tell you the guy's name. I ran up and said, hey, can I have you know, your autograph? And he signs it. I'm like, oh, you know, sweet, thanks. And I'm like, dad, look. He's like, oh, you got Tim Lincecum's autograph. And my dad kind of looks like, yeah, you just got Timmy's autograph. I'm like, I don't know who that is, but, you know, sweet. It's like, do it again. Here's another one. I'm like, all right. So, you know, me being my kid, you know, following my dad, I run back down like, hey, can I have your autograph again? He's like, again? And he signs it again. So I got two baseballs with Tim Lincecum on the homestand, on his first, you know, homestand. And I they're somewhere away in the closet. But like, that's like, that moment on, I was like, oh, let me follow this guy and like see how he does. And then, well, you know the rest.
Yeah, the whole world started following him. And he's, I saw a stat today because we're recording this on the afternoon of February 9th, and Corey Kluber retired today, and there's a whole list of guys that had multiple Cy Youngs who aren't in the Hall of Fame, and Lincecum like leads the list. It's like all those guys with the really short
pick. Yeah.
Lincecum, yeah. Johan Santana, Brett Saberhagen, Kluber, like all those guys that were great but didn't do it for long enough. And Lincecum's career is really an anomaly. He was amazing. He was must-see TV. He's my favorite player of all time, the guy that got me into baseball. I say it all the time. But, yeah, those are good. That's a good three right there. With Lopez
I just love the way that Lopez threw. I feel like it's like just like from a perspective of like being a batter, I would not want to face a guy that's throwing 80, 90 mile an hour. So, I mean, like he throws harder than that, but like just off the, like me personally having to like sit there and be like, this guy's throwing complete sidearm, if not three quarter release towards me. I feel like I'm going to get hit every time. I'm just going to back up, and then he's going to strike me out easily. It's going to be 1, 2, 3. Like, to go like out of the Giants real quick. Like, mm-hmm. I loved watching like Darren O'Day and Ziegler, like all those submariners. So like currently my favorite is Rogers, being able to see him just throw way down there. Like he's a true submariner, you know, through and through. That's the awesome stuff. I like the quirky pitchers. That's just what makes it so much fun. And that's why I just love the game of chess that you get to play with your bullpen against, you know, the enemy team.
So a big bullpen guy, and we've learned that during the course of this podcast. And it's funny because every rule that's getting, you know, back to the rules real quick, but not a lot of time on them. Every rule being introduced in baseball right now is being brought in to hurt the pitcher somehow. So,
yeah, a little unfortunate.
But as a Giants fan, like, did you have a favorite of the three championships? I know it's like picking from
your. Did I have a favorite?
Yeah, you don't have kids, so you can't pick from them. But I'd imagine like picking from, or you know, your favorite.
I feel like in 2010, I didn't really quite understand or quite grasp just how epic that was. So I, you know, out of respect, I probably shouldn't pick 2010. 2012, I knew what was going on. And I was like, oh my God, like, hey, this is just a regular thing for us, right? Like, yeah, this is nothing. Giants are just going to, you know, like the machoism of following the Giants at that point is like, yeah, you know, we're just a championship team. It's nothing special, you know? And then 2014, I think 2014 would have to be my favorite because I was the most cognizant of us winning and the most behind watching every single game, including taking my phone out during high school classes and just like, I'm sorry, you're trying to teach me right now. I'm sorry. There's a game going on. Like, do you not want to, you know, like, you know, like I think that was my most followed. And I remember all of Game 7 like that. Like, I mean, it was just none of us wanted to move off the couch or like move in any way. Cause like, what if it's bad luck? Like we need to watch this last game. What's going to happen? Definitely 2014.
Yeah. That Alex Gordon ball that got past Gregor Blanco in center field, everybody threw up like that, every physically and, you know, figuratively, we all threw up. And those day games during like the LCS and the LDS, mm-hmm. Those were just stupid. Like those were horrible, horribly timed for students. And I remember watching the one against the Cardinals where Randy Choate, who's another reliever who throws, you know, a Luigi or left-handed specialist, whatever, mm-hmm. threw the ball down the right field line on the Gregor Blanco bunt. And I was at school for that one. And you kind of have to go into like an abbreviated celebration, I guess. I mean, that's the only way to do it because poorly scheduled games, I guess.
You know, I'm completely, you know, the whole room's quiet in Spanish class and I have like a little headphone in and I'm like, yeah. And everyone's like, whoa. I'm like, oh, sorry. I'm watching the game. And I was like, what are you doing on your phone? And I'm like, I'm watching the Giants game. We're going to head to the World Series. What are you talking about? This is totally, you know, it was acceptable to me, but I don't think my teachers saw that.
Did you ever learn Spanish?
Not that semester. I was too busy stressed out about the Giants during finals.
Yeah. I took 2 years of high school Spanish and I know mi amo Steven y tú and a few other like simple phrases, nothing else. So this could be a bilingual podcast, but I dropped the ball on high school Spanish.
Yeah, you and me both. I feel like we would both insult the Spanish language.
Yeah, I can't do it. But although there would be an element of surprise for me to whip out fluent Spanish in my back pocket. So maybe it's still something. I'm still young. We're still young. It's still something that we could pick up, Nick. So
there you go.
A few more things here before we wrap up. Do you have a favorite baseball movie? Pick from the buffet.
Oh. Sandlot.
Sandlot. Why?
Because I think that's the one. I think that's the only one that I've been kind of like, not forced onto, but my dad was like, you gotta watch The Sandlot. Like, that's it. Like, I think it was just on and I just watched it and that's what my dad put on. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I've seen, you know, Field of Dreams, all that, you know, fun stuff, but I feel like Sandlot would be like the one where I'd be like, if it were to come on the TV right now, I'd probably sit and be infatuated by it. I'd sit there and watch. I know the whole plot. I just said sit there and watch anyway, though.
Yeah, no, that's one of those movies where you could do that. And one of the actor that plays Hamilton Porter, I recently came across the idea of trying to get him on the podcast. So
that'd be fun.
That would be fun. He was, you know, he doesn't look different if you look at a picture of the actor.
Yeah, I've seen.
And it's weird to think that he's like 45 years old. That's not fair. a few more things here. Food. Like if you're going to the ballpark and you're watching Sergio Romo get called for a pitch clock at the ballpark, what are you eating?
What am I eating?
Yeah, what are you eating at the ballpark?
I'm eating sadness. Like, what the hell, man? No, okay, but like, are you talking about like go-to eats at Oracle Park? Crazy Cat Crab Sandwich, 100%. I do not care about the price when I'm at the. Sean can vouch for me on this. All of my friends can vouch for me on this. When I'm at the ballpark, I allotted enough money for me to be at the ballpark. Mm-hmm. So I'll have my Crazy Crab Sandwich. I'll have my Anchor Steam beer. May they rest in peace. And I'll have, you know, my garlic fries. Like that's the go-to. Like there's nothing better.
There you go. That's all you need. And you are a pretty big wine guy. I've seen all the posts. Like,
yeah, that is true. You have a
fascination with wine, obviously being from the area.
Being like, in wine country.
Yep.
I work 2 or 3 days a week or however many days they need me at Highway 12 Winery here in Sonoma. So, you know, it's kind of the main job right now. So I get to kind of split two of my, you know, great passions, which is winemaking and photography right now. As a job, and I love that. And actually Highway 12 is being porn and served at Oracle Park. So if you're in the Field Club, you can find our Chardonnay and our red blend there, which is pretty awesome because when I first I think this was pretty recent too, but when I scanned my ticket in last, or is it last season or 2 seasons ago, at the field club, and I kind of went up to the bar to get a drink, and I'm like, wait a second, I know that label. I work there. What the hell? When did this happen? No one from marketing told me that we were at Oracle Park. Like, that's insane.
That's great. Well, that's like two worlds combining right there. That's pretty funny. Last thing here. Favorite baseball moment. That's loaded.
Favorite baseball moment.
There's a lot of them that you could choose from.
I mean, besides Pablo Sandoval pitching for us when we were miserably losing, like, that was a hilarious moment. Absolutely loved that. Oh man, you should have sent this one to me ahead of time so I could think.
Any that stand out? That I'll tell you
mine.
Mine was
Ishikawa's
walk off homer to win the pennant. As a kid, that was the greatest thing I've ever seen. And then, you know, David Freese is up there. Rajay Davis's home run in Game 7, even though the then Cleveland Indians didn't win, that was a huge moment. And then obviously Tim Lincecum's 14 strikeout performance in Game 1 of the division series. So there's a few that stand out. But none stand out for you at the moment.
Because there's so many.
I paralyzed.
You know, Nick. I would have to say watching Matt Cain throw a fucking perfect game.
Okay.
I swore. Sorry, Matt Cain throwing that perfect game was probably one of my most favorite moments watching. I was literally on pins and needles watching the whole time, and maybe a close second would be I don't even know where he's at now, but also watching Heston throw a no-hitter was absolutely awesome to me. This nobody coming out of nowhere up in the organization and then being thrown out there and automatically throws that, like, that's insane.
Yeah,
I guess you could
Tuesday
say
night in Queens.
Yeah, another moment. I guess I could say that's anti-Giants was sitting in utter despair as this young guy was it Stripling throwing an almost no hitter against us,
yeah,
Dodgers and Giants, and just sitting there in my seat watching this happen. I'm like, this cannot actually be, like, this is insane. And then he gets taken out of the game. And me, I'm a diehard Giants fan, but in that split second, I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You take out a pitcher who's literally about to throw one of the hardest things in baseball, and you're just going to take him out?
Now
classic
it happens
Dodger
like
move.
Multiple times a
classic
year.
Dodger
And,
move.
Yeah, classic. And Trevor Brown ended up hitting a homer like the next batter after Stripling got removed. That was an incredible moment. And Chris Heston, if you're out there, answer my emails. He's a real estate
agent. Hey, Hesto Presto.
He's a real estate. I had that shirt. He's a real estate agent in Florida. So he's hustling out there.
I will say my favorite non-playing moment, Giants related, was and this is the reason why I go early, everyone, is I think it was a night game, and I couldn't even tell you who was playing, but I got in line to like sit in line at 3 o'clock, and the gates open 2 hours before the game. So I'm there way early with me and my friends, because they know that I'm insane. And I sat there, and this tall guy is just walking by with all black on. And I'm like, I feel like I know the build of that. I just kind of looked at him. I'm like, I feel like I know that guy from somewhere, but like, I'm just looking at him a little bit. And he walks into the public house. And then he walks back out like 15, 20 minutes later. And it finally dawned on me, that is Javier Lopez. So I ran up to him. I'm like, Javi, can I get your autograph? And I was like, wait a second, actually. And I take off my jersey because I had a Lopez jersey on at that time. And he looks, he's like, how'd you find me out? It was your build. And he signed my jersey right then and there. And I was like, yeah, that was an awesome moment.
That's awesome. And everybody's got those Lopez stories, apparently, because I have one. One of the Giants fan
what? Fans, okay, let's hear it.
We got into an elevator, and, you know, we were just kind of like, you know, there's etiquette in an elevator where you just kind of, you know,
stand there in silence.
Yeah, everybody's got their, you know, and it was a full elevator because it was FanFest and we were going up, and There's some autograph lines upstairs. We wanted to check them out. And I'm looking around the elevator, and I look to my right, and I do it like a double take. I'm like, and it's Lopez with someone from the Giants who was kind of escorting him, I guess. And he was just in his jersey, and we got a picture with him. I'll have to send it your way. But he was, and I think my fourth grade teacher, like, her favorite Giant was Javier Lopez. So everybody loves Javi, and like for good reason.
Dude, he's awesome, especially when I get to hear him. Like, I think I got to hear, was it like four or five games last year? He was on a broadcast, and that was so much fun. That's awesome. I'm not gonna tempt fate or anything like that, but I would love to hear him on the radio more. Being a commentator for the Giants. I hope Crook and Kipe stay as long as they can, because they're an icon. They are a rock for the Giants organization. So
no
I'll,
doubt.
I'll leave it at that.
No doubt about it. Well, Nick, I really appreciate you coming on for a few minutes here and taking some time. It was great to hear your baseball story. So thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, not a problem. I would say last thing, the player that I'm most excited looking forward to this 2024 season is Mike Yastrzemski. I'm going with an outfielder. This man has dodged me getting his autograph for 3 years now on his jersey, but I'm so freaking excited to see him play. So I'll leave it at
to
that.
Get that autograph
one of these damn days.
Yes, and hopefully it doesn't come from, like, you know, you buy a mystery bag at the ballpark and that's how you get it. No, you gotta
oh
get this
no
guy.
no
yeah.
I'm gonna get the autograph. He was actually, because I've been weary, I mean to drag this on, I've been a little weary for the past four years of like buying a Giants jersey, because I'm like, yeah, I'll just stick with the classics, because if I buy one and then the guy moves on like Jock Peterson, I'd be like, well, what was the point of buying
have to
the
bleep that out
jersey?
now.
And then well, you could insert any name here that's left the Giants organization.
Yeah.
And just like, what if I buy this jersey and they leave the organization? Because, you know, I didn't know if we were going to go through rebuild or whatever. And I was like, you know what? I think Mike Yastrzemski is going to be around for a while. It was between him or Austin Slater. So sorry, Slater. I picked Yaz. And best purchase ever. I got it in the Metallica one. So that was awesome.
Now he's one of the longest tenure Giants on the team right now. Probably the longest, I think. So shout out to Austin Slater. But Nick, thanks again. And everybody could go ahead and follow Nick on Twitter or X at VNick198 to go check him out. He's doing some award-winning work over there for the Press Democrat, and also pitching in still for the Oak Leaf, does a good job. And for the sake of his employment, go check out Highway 12 Winery.
Thank you.
And you will see Nick and I in La Jolla in early March. We'll get a picture together. We'll post it. It will circulate and go viral. I believe that.
Exactly. We'll be there for the ACP awards and JACC awards. So it'll be fun.
Absolutely. And let's get on to our next victim.
We're going to take a break on RizzoCast, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor.
Hey, RizzoCast listeners, how you enjoying the show so far? If you are enjoying the content and want more RizzoCast, please make sure to subscribe and leave a review on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. We're also on social media, so follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at RizzoCast. Now let's get back to the show.
All righty, and we are back, and we are pleased to be joined with another lifelong baseball fan. It is Nathan from South Carolina. Nathan is nice enough to hop on the podcast and join the show. Nathan, what's going on? How you doing?
I'm good, man. How you doing? I'm really pleased to be here, man. Glad you had me.
Absolutely. And I commented before we press play and everything, I commented on your accent, and you mentioned that it's pretty cool that baseball is not in one spot. You're in South Carolina. I'm in California. That's one of the things I like about baseball, but I think it's cool that you noted that it could be it's a very national game. And I think that's one of the cool things about this sport.
Well, it's not even just a national game. I mean, this is something that goes, you know, overseas, and think
Definitely.
About how big it is in Japan and other places like that, Mexico. So that's one really cool thing that I love about baseball, is it brings so many different people together from so many different walks of life.
No doubt about it. And I want to start there because I know, you know, you've got different kinds of ties to baseball. I know, we'll get into the umpiring stuff in a bit too, cause I want to pick your brain about that. But first, like, how did you get into the game? When did it begin for you? When did you realize that baseball was something that you had a passion for and something that you wanted to be a part of?
You know, I don't ever remember a time in my life. I'm 40 years old, and I don't remember a time in my life where baseball wasn't a part of it. I remember playing T-ball when I was younger, obviously with my connections with my grandfather, which I'm sure we'll talk about shortly. You know, I always had the game around me. My dad was a high school baseball coach. So, you know, I grew up and it was everywhere I went. It was not just playing, but if I was not playing in the off season, I was at one of my dad's practices or things like that. So it's something that I have always been around my whole life and have stayed with it up until today. You mentioned I'm an umpire. Like, I played all the way through high school. I played through college. I stayed on 5 years after I finished playing in college, and I helped coach at a college. I coached the summer college league. And now for the last 5 or 6 years, I've gotten into umpiring. So it's something that I can't really get away from, and I'm okay with that.
Absolutely. No, it's like the walk of life, right? There's different evolutions of your love of the game. And that's really cool. You mentioned you played in high school and college. Like, if we had to get a Nathan scouting report on things that you did well, maybe some strengths and weaknesses, what would you say if you had to drop a scouting report for yourself?
So I was a catcher. So I really good defensive catcher, very good knowledge of the game, can handle a pitching staff well, but he's going to hit two or he's going to hit nine because I'm only going to hit about 250 or 260. But you're not going to run on me and you're not going to get a ball by me in the dirt. So that was kind of what I prided myself on. I knew I was not a great offensive player. So I worked really, really hard and was the absolute best defensive catcher that I could be.
Really nice, really nice. And you mentioned your grandfather, and for those that don't know, do you want to kind of introduce who your grandfather was and kind of the impact that he had on your life?
Yeah, so my grandfather was Bob Bolin, and he played 13 years in the major leagues. He played from 61 through 69, I do believe, with the San Francisco Giants. And then he spent the first half of the 70 season with the then expansion Milwaukee Brewers, and was traded about midway through that season to the Boston Red Sox, and then spent the final 3.5 years of his career in Boston. So again, you know, very, very fortunate, very blessed. He just passed away this past June. Very fortunate and blessed to have had him for 40 years, to be able to just pick his brain with baseball, to be able to get his stories and some of the guys that he played with and some of the games that he played in, and just learning the game and learning how the old school game was played, which is something that I really, really love. Is I feel like when he played in that 60s and 70s, in even my opinion, I think is the greatest generation of baseball that has been played, just because of the players and the way it was played. So very, very fortunate to have had him in my life.
No doubt. And for, you know, for those in the Bay Area, I know I get a lot of Bay Area listeners just naturally. And this past year, there was a little area where the Giants honored some of their past alumni who passed away in the past year or so. Bob Bolin had a little area there on the club level where, there's some facts shared about him. So it was a really cool thing that the Giants did to put that together for him with flowers and everything. I took a picture of that and sent it to you. So hopefully.
Yeah, it was really cool. And it was really neat. So the only time that I've ever been to the new stadium in San Francisco was in August of 2016, when they dedicated the Gaylord Perry statue. And he was fortunate enough. He was one of the speakers at the statue presentation. So we all, as a family, went out, and I only got to spend a day. I was still coaching high school football at the time, so I was only there for a day. But my wife and my mom and stepdad and aunts and uncles and stuff like that, they got to spend several days out there, and he got to kind of show them around the town and things that he did back in the day. I got to see the brick and the plaque on the Wall of Fame outside the stadium, so it's really, really cool.
That is really, really cool. And of course, him and Gaylord, I'm sure, were close.
Very close, yeah.
Very close. And they, you know, kind of passed away at similar times. And Now Gaylord's up there throwing spitballs to him. So.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. They're telling all the stories to everybody else. Hey, this is what we really did back in the day. So,
exactly. And speaking of stories, I'm sure that your grandpa had a bunch of stories that maybe he passed down through the family. Was there any story that he told about his playing career that kind of stuck with you?
So one of the biggest things, so it was really cool. He lived where he lived in Easley. He was on number 5 tee box at a golf course, and Alvin Dark, his manager, was on number one green. So they were together all the time before Alvin passed away. So they would always be in each other's house, and we would play rounds of golf with each other. So there's all kinds of stories that he would tell. And my favorite was always, he would always talk about Willie Mays, and he would always talk about all these different players that would have to dive for a ball and would have to, you know, make these outstanding catches. And he told me, he said, God's honest truth. He told me this 100 times, probably. He said, God's honest truth. He said, I never saw Willie Mays dive for a ball. He said, because he never had to. He said, because he knew exactly where it was going to be. And it was kind of funny. He was telling me that story one time on a golf course, and Alvin was like mid swing, and he kind of stopped and put the club down, and he said, that's the truth. He said, that's why he's the best center fielder to ever play the game. And I was like, I don't disagree, 100%.
Man, that must have been some kind of information that you soaked hanging out with those guys.
that's why I'm telling you. Like, I'm so fortunate and I'm so blessed, because through BB, that's what I call my grandfather, through BB, I mean, I was able to meet and connect with Alvin Dark and Gaylord Perry and Bobby Richardson from the Yankees. And I was able, when I came out there in 2016, I was able to meet Willie McCovey, and I was able to meet Orlando Cepeda and Willie Mays. And it's just this big, it's like we talked about earlier, baseball is just this big, huge umbrella that doesn't have one spot. And I'm very lucky to have been able to have a kind of a front row seat to a lot of that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And did as you call him, BB, did Grandpa go to any of your games growing up? Did he give you any feedback on your career? As you know, you mentioned you're a big catch and throw guy. Did he give you any feedback and support over those times?
He absolutely did. He would, you know, I would play a game that he would be at, and he would always be there, and he would be like, all right, you know, I'm not ever going to tell you what to do. He said, this is what you could do. So that's the kind of the way that he would offer advice. He's like, you know, I'm not going to be the one that's going to tell you exactly how to do something, but you could do this and be a little bit better. And even up until even this past spring, before he got really sick and passed away, early in the season with umpiring, he would ask me something, and I would say, hey, I had this situation in a game. And he'd be like, oh, did they do this and this? So he's still even up until the last couple of months that he was alive, he still had that mind that he was always looking to give insight into baseball.
Really cool. And let's jump to umpiring, because I find I've had a few umpires on the podcast before. Dale Scott was on a while back.
Nice,
and, Greg Gibson has been on before too, and those are all big league umpires. And you do it not in the big leagues, maybe one day if you're up for that.
I don't know. My wife might not look back too much, and we'll see.
Yeah, she would never see you. it'd be like
which would be good or bad. You never know. So we'll see.
Yeah, good or bad. Maybe some days she wants you out of the house in a 3-game series in Chicago, and you'll be okay with that. But how did you get into umpiring? Like, why was umpiring the next step after, you know, coaching and playing? Was it just that angle of being around the game? I think it's funny. I saw the pictures of you as a home plate umpire, and it's like you really didn't move that far from being a catcher. You just kind of stood up a little bit, kind of.
So it's kind of funny. So I the last time I coached was in 2012. I helped my dad. His last year coaching high school baseball, I helped him. I was his assistant. And then I just kind of got out of it. I was coaching high school football. I was content with that. And then I stopped coaching high school football about 7 years ago. And randomly one fall, winter in 2018, I kind of got the itch to kind of be back around the game of baseball. And I reached out to a guy that had actually umpired a lot of my games when I was in high school. And a few of my games when I was in college. He is the area assigner in the upstate of South Carolina. And I just reached out to him, and I was like, hey, you know, I would like to get into it. You know, what do I need to do? And he said, absolutely. He said, and one thing he told me, funny you mentioned being a catcher. He said, one thing that I have found, he said, catchers especially, he said, make decent umpires because you have a general idea of what the strike zone is. It's not like you're having to start fresh with somebody who has never been and received a ball from that angle. So I got into it, and I've been doing it for about 5 or 6 years, and I really enjoy it. It's one of those things that I tell people, you know, I got out of coaching, I got into umpiring, you know, I get yelled at for 2 hours instead of, you know, 6 months, and I'm okay with that. And once that's done, you go to the next game and it's not a big deal, but I really do enjoy it. A lot of the coaches in this area, a lot of the high school coaches in this area, I know just because especially from coaching football and coaching baseball for that year, I've known these guys for a long time. So I have a good relationship with them. And one of my goals, and because it was something that influenced me, one of the reasons that I got into umpiring is because of the relationships I made with umpires when I was playing in high school and college. And obviously that ultimately paid off now, getting me back into it. But I want to be that kind of that positive role model. Obviously you're not a coach anymore, but you can still help a catcher or help a player influence their game from an umpire's perspective.
No doubt. That's a great explanation. And I always want, cause like umpires, like it's tough because, you know, there's such a shortage in the United States of umpires. And I guess, what would you say to anybody on the fence about maybe wanting to do it, but also understanding that, you know, that they don't want to hear the abuse that could go on, and cause it's a tough world out there, and that's maybe why that there's a shortage. Do you feel the same way? And I guess, what would you say to someone looking to get into it?
There definitely is a shortage. I mean, that's one thing we see it here as well. I mean,
I'm getting emails.
we're always trying to recruit new guys. My biggest thing is, and one thing that I have learned is you have to take what you hear with a grain of salt, because I played all the way through college. I coached through college. I coached in high, like I've been around the game my whole life. I didn't realize how much of the rules I did not know until I started umpiring. So you have to take that, and you have to know that you are now the enforcer of the rules. So you know the rules. People in the stands don't really know the rules. They get emotional with things. So you just kind of have to, you have to know that, all right, that's somebody's son. They're upset. You just kind of have to laugh at a lot of it. I would say if anybody's on the fence, just do it. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I've made a lot of good friends. It's decent side money. And if you try to advance more, you know, there's good money in it if you can move up the ranks. But it's definitely something I would encourage people to do, especially if you have a love for the game. You're not coaching. If you have a love for baseball, definitely get involved with it.
Yeah. If there's an incident at a game where like something happens and like you get yelled at, are you the type to just go home and you know, maybe tell your wife like, hey, I got yelled at, and like you mentioned, laugh it off? Or do you?
I'll laugh it off in the middle of a game. If I'm behind the plate and I'll say something, somebody says something to me, I'll just kind of laugh. And the catcher, I mean, most of the catchers, the players are not dumb. They understand what they're hearing is not, you know, not right all the time too. So you can kind of make some comment to them and they'll laugh with you. So yeah, I very rarely, I think in 6 years of doing this, I think I have really only been super mad after a game, maybe 2 or 3 times, just because you just have to realize that at the end of the day, it is a game. And I mean, you're there, if you're not there, they can't play. And you have to realize that, you know, you're not always the person that make, you're not the person that makes the rules, you're enforcing the rules. And you have to understand that not everybody's going to like the person that enforces the rules, but they have to be there for a reason.
And 99% of the time, somebody won't be waiting for you at the trunk of your car.
It's only happened once. Okay. Only happened once. So, you know, and I'm lucky with that. It's only happened once. So, and the police officer was right behind him to get him out of there. So it's okay.
Oh, there you go. You had backup. maybe you didn't need backup. I'm sure you didn't, but if anything happened, but, do you have any like one, again, nobody likes to see a kid get ejected ever or a coach get ejected ever. Ultimately, it's not good for the program, for that specific team or that specific school. But there's got to be a silver lining of like one great ejection story that you have. Do you have one?
You know, I don't, because I've only ever, you know, I've ejected one player doing high school ball. And, you know, looking back, I probably should have given him a little bit more grace than I did. It's just because he had bad language, and that's one of those situations. Should have just pulled him aside and said, hey, just don't do that again. But you know, I really don't. I tell people I don't do a ton of travel ball anymore, because I ejected more people in one weekend doing travel ball than I ever have in 6 years of doing high school ball, just because it's a little bit that team, especially I ejected three guys off one team. Just because when you drop a FU at somebody continuously, like one after the other, you know, you kind of have to throw those out. But, you know, I don't have a, and I cross my fingers and I knock on wood when I say this, I don't have a Wally Backman story yet that somebody's going after me like that. So we'll hope that doesn't happen anytime soon.
Yeah, the bucket of balls, like the balls stay in the bucket and the bats stay in the bat rack is what you're saying.
Exactly. You know, I mentioned the guy that was our signer, the umpire. So I knew those two umpires. I'm sure you've seen the Wally Backman video.
Oh, yeah.
So I knew those two guys. They used to umpire our summer college league. And the one that's standing in between him saying, Wally, 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 move back. He's actually our area assigner in the upstate. He's the one I called 6 years ago to get back into the game. So it's kind of funny.
That is kind of funny.
That happened in Anderson, which is only about 20 minutes from here.
Oh, interesting. That's really cool. I didn't know that. A few more things here before we wrap. I want to kind of just hit off a few of these. Do you have a favorite player in the game today? Like there's so many great young players. Yeah. And we mentioned at the top of the show, so many great international players too. Is there anybody that stands out that you like watching in today's game?
Man, I really like watching Shohei Ohtani play. Yep. He's just, because you don't get a lot of that anymore. You don't get a lot of guys that can do both. You don't even get a lot of those anymore in high school, because they make you choose and they make you specialize so early. It's just really cool and really refreshing to see a guy that can dominate on the mound and can also go hit 45 home runs and is what seems to be from afar, seems to be very humble about it, seems to be very just go about your business, do things the right way, it seems like. So he is a lot of fun to watch. And it's one of those things, he's kind of like Mike Trout from an East Coast perspective. We don't see them play a lot. They're great players. Julio Rodriguez with the Mariners. They're great players. We just don't see them play a lot on the East Coast. So it is really cool when we get a chance to see Ohtani and some of those guys play.
No doubt. He's a unicorn. I mean, there's no doubt.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned in high school, like not a lot of guys do both. Not a lot of guys can even play two sports in high school anymore because one of the coaches is pissed off, you know?
That's a whole other segment on a whole other podcast.
Oh, we got to get you on again to talk about that.
I could spend hours on with that. Look,
okay.
Hey, again,
I'm going to write your name down because
I'm in.
Yeah, I will write your name down. I have takes on that and how some of the kids, you know, are being treated and the eighth graders who are signing letters of intent for college, you know, it's horrendous. So we can
go on. I work with middle school. I work in a middle school. So I see that kind of stuff, even filtering down to sixth, seventh and eighth graders. So I get it.
And it's not them.
No, it's not them. Nope. Correct.
It's the voice inside the ear that comes 100%. From somebody. But yeah, 100%. No, we definitely got to get, I'll definitely call you again and we could talk about that and we could make that the own podcast. How did a baseball movie, any cool baseball movies? Cause I'm sure you grew up with a bunch of them. You know, I was telling someone the other day that a lot of the good ones have come out like in the late 80s, early 90s. And we haven't had a good one since like probably Moneyball was the last big baseball movie to come out. But is there any baseball movie that you like that kind of connects you to the sport?
So I've got a list. I went, like I said, when I went back and listened to some of the other ones, I kind of had a feeling this was coming. I got a list of six that are my go-to.
Okay.
Bull Durham is on the list. Summer Catch is on the list simply because of my connection to that kind of summer college. Like, I don't think people realize how accurate the baseball side of Summer Catch is. Like, that is summer college baseball in a nutshell. Rookie of the Year. I love Rookie of the Year. I love Little Big League. Little Big League's probably my favorite, where he takes over when his grandfather dies and takes
over
the team.
Every kid's dream. Yeah.
Every kid's dream to be the manager and the owner. Fever Pitch. So I know my grandfather played the majority of his career with the Giants, but I'm the black sheep of the family and I chose the Red Sox as my favorite team just because, and so I get looked at funny from the family when I talk about that, but Fever Pitch, just because it chronicled that 2004 season. And I mean, that's the backdrop of the movie. And that was probably one of the coolest baseball moments ever, is when the Red Sox finally won again. And then I really like new movie. I like Moneyball. I love the analytics part of it. I really like Trouble with the Curve.
Mm.
just from the, because it kind of shows you the how the whole agent and scout kind of perspective works. So I've got a list. That's what I was texting my wife about earlier. I was like, I feel like every one of my favorite movies is a baseball movie and somehow.
Yeah, no doubt. That is, a lot of the sports movies coming out here are like, they'll never match some of the ones that came out like 30 years
ago. No, absolutely. That, like, there will never be another Sandlot. You can do Sandlot 2, 3, and 4 all you want to, but there is never another Sandlot, and there will never be another Wendy Peppercorn.
No, there will never be another Wendy Peppercorn. And we keep searching at the public pools to find Wendy, and we never do. We never do. And a generation of kids had the idea of playing dead at the pool.
Exactly.
That's awesome. A few more things here. How about, I've asked people this too, I'm sure you've seen, but what's your food, like favorite ballpark food when you're attending a game? Let's say you're at Fenway Park, right? You're enjoying your Red Sox. You're watching your guy, Rafael Devers. What are you chowing down at the ballpark?
So I'm real simple with ballpark food. I need a hot dog. I am a hot dog at a ballpark guy. And then I like to find out maybe what a specialty thing is at that park and try that as well. But if I have to just blindly walk in, I'm going to do a hot dog, just because that's, to me, that's a sports food, is a hot dog and a beer, or a hot dog and a soda, and just sit back and relax and enjoy it.
Yeah, and the beer will blow your budget just a little bit.
Yeah, right there. That's like 8 hot dogs just in one beer. So
exactly. And sometimes the hot dogs are like $6 a hot dog. It's like, what are we doing here? You know,
it's all a money grab. That's another thing too. It's all a money grab, whatever.
Yeah. We will go, we'll have just a complaining podcast at some point where you write down a list of things you want to complain about. I'll write down a list of things I want to complain about, and we'll just annoy the hell out of people. Final thing, favorite baseball moment that you've seen on TV, that you've seen in person. Does anything stick out, like a home run, a big moment, a World Series win? Like, what sticks out for you as a baseball fan? Any big moment?
So me personally, the big moment that sticks out for me. So like I said, after I finished playing in college, I stayed on and coached at the same school. And it was a small NAIA school in upstate South Carolina that had not had a ton of success for a few years. And then my second year coaching there, we actually played in the National Christian College Athletic Association National Tournament, which that was a big deal for that school at the time. And we actually won that NCCAA National Championship in 2007. And just to kind of see it from where I saw it as a freshman at that school 7 years before, when we won, I think, 12, 13, 14 games, to win in 40 games in that 2007 season, to kind of see that come full circle and kind of see all that hard work pay off. To me, that's my personal best baseball memory, just being in the dugout and watching a team of 30 guys run onto the field and dogpile each other, and just kind of looking at the other coaches in the dugout and be like, this is what we've tried to be doing forever, and we finally did it. So that was it.
Yeah, that's a really cool moment. And I'm going down your Twitter bio. Your son's name is Scout, one of them?
My daughter's name is Scout.
Your daughter's name is Scout.
Yeah.
That's an amazing baseball name.
So it's kind of a derivative. My wife is a librarian, so it's kind of got a little bit of that To Kill a Mockingbird Scout in it. But also the fall that she was pregnant, Samantha Ponder was still the sideline analyst on ESPN's college football games.
Yep.
And her daughter's name was Scout, and she had her on game day one morning, and we kind of looked at each other and like, okay, there it is. Like, it kind of brings in the books and that. So yeah, Scout is, and she lives up to her name, but she is a fireball. That's for sure.
That's awesome. I also saw you tweet about the Greg Maddux, the Greg Maddux pitch framing from the catcher.
There's a whole other podcast we could get on. I'm telling you, man, like, I got a lot of opinions on things.
Oh, heck yeah. Well, Nathan, man, I really appreciate you coming on. We'll definitely have you back. This was a blast. We'll have you back. We'll do the ultimate complaining. We'll do pitch framing. I'm sure you got takes on that. Thanks for coming on, man. And I appreciate the time.
Hey, really enjoyed this. I'd do this again in a heartbeat. Really, really enjoyed it, man.
Absolutely. And everybody could follow Nathan on Twitter at Nathan Swords_. Go check him out. I'll link that in the description. Go check Rizzo Cast out on Spotify, Apple Podcast, YouTube, wherever you find your stuff, and on social media at RizzoCast on Twitter and Instagram, and also TikTok too. And getting in the TikTok game. A lot of people are in the TikTok game, so I'm hyping up some content on there too. Thank you everybody for listening, and have a great day.